Well, most of us, in fact, all of us were very much shocked, dismayed and upset and sad as the news came through on Saturday afternoon of the six innocent folks in the shopping centre in Sydney and Bondi became victim to a stabbing attack. Joining us to cover that today is Xanthi Ballard, criminologist from the University of Newcastle. Xanthi, always nice to talk to you. It's just never a nice day when we do. Good morning.
No, we never get to talk about anything cheerful, do we? And we're certainly not going to today.
Look, you could just imagine that walking down to the shops, into the shopping centre, one of the most busiest places you can be, the word safe generally would come to mind. The last thing you would be expecting in a place like that on a busy time of the week would be those events to unfold.
Exactly, and I actually think that's the point. I think this was a fully intentful act. I think a venue was selected that they knew, the offender knew, was going to be very busy. There were going to be lots of potential victims available. And I think that was exactly the point, to cause as much carnage in as little time as possible.
Looking at some of the things that were in and around that, I mean, it's so tragic, so horrible. You can imagine for the families, and of course, we know the poor mother that passed away with her little child, passing that on to the other two men. So many stories of bravery as well. But when you think of a big centre like that, they all have their procedures, don't they? Of like, okay, there's a major event happening. We need to lock the joint down quickly. A lot of the people in those shops and those stores, particularly Xanthi, many of them being younger kids at high school, earning a couple of bucks on the weekend, the setter really did come down pretty quick, didn't it?
It absolutely did, and it shows that the processes and procedures in place work. You know, they've obviously practiced this. They know what to do. Sadly, you know, they have to prepare for this type of situation. I think every commendation to everyone there that day. We've got the obvious heroes who obviously, you know, intervened with the offender and prevented him from harming any other people. But we also have those quiet heroes who were just, you know, as you say, locking people down, some of them very young. And this must have been terrifying for them. And they kept their heads, did what they had to do. And I've no doubt that saved lives.
Something a little on the side on this as well, and I'm not sure how much time you spend trawling through social media and news sites and stuff. I kind of do. And when there is generally an information vacuum, it can get filled very quickly. But with the world being so much faster now, the need for that information to come out to prevent that vacuum from being filled elsewhere seems even more so. But did that space fill up with a lot of suspicions and arrows pointing in all sorts of different directions?
It did, and I think that was very problematic. Obviously, we saw a situation where the wrong person was named. We saw all sorts of conspiracy theories. I mean, everyone is going to leap to the, is this a terror incident? Because that's natural. You know, look at what's going on in geopolitics today. It's completely expected that that would be a fear that people would have. Is this the start of something else? Is this a cell that's activated? Is this one person or is this more? All of that's totally normal. But when that is circulating so wildly on social media, it's problematic. The police can't confirm anything until they're sure. So they can't dampen down those rumours. But ultimately, you know, this can lead to social unrest when, you know, that goes around like wildfire. Certain groups start getting named and it's all totally fictitious. And we have to be really cautious that other people are not being blamed as part of our community for the acts of one man.
Do you think that is in a sense, part of our human nature that we want to know things? I mean, this is a huge event that happened, unfolded very quickly, and we just have that innateness to, I want to know what's happening. So when information comes up, and regardless of how good that information ultimately ends up being, it just fills that space because it's a need in us.
I think we do need information. I think we're also used to getting information, as you say, very quickly now with the world of social media. I mean, as soon as it happened, videos were coming out far in advance of what we would have seen previously, you know, the official videos of CCTV when that was released. So things were almost instant. But until those official police reports come out, naming the offender, for example, and determining whether this is one person or whether this is something else, then I think people just need to be really cautious. We cannot be in a situation where people are being named, you know, and accused of something like this, and also where, you know, those wild theories about it being terrorist and then linked to certain parts of the population. This is very damaging, and I think we just have to avoid that, wait for those official reports until we're sure what's happening.
Yeah, because particularly a couple of those big social media accounts with large followings sort of locked onto that pretty quickly. And when you've got a large following, you have a large following. That's just that's the nature of the beast.
And it feeds conspiracy theories, and that's really unhelpful in this type of situation.
When we look at the offender who ended up losing his life thanks to the brave policewoman that stood forward and took action, it did sort of come out that there may have been issues with him psychologically as well. Do you think that's going to open up a broader conversation about how we manage those sort of individuals moving forward to further mitigate risk, or at least people getting angry about the fact that it's seeming that we may not?
Well, I think certainly that is a problem in Australia. We know that mental health services are poor in Australia. We know that people do struggle to access them. You try, you know, if you called up to go and see a psychologist today, make an appointment, I challenge you to find somebody you can see within 3 and 6 months kind of thing. So that's highly problematic. Yes, yeah, seriously, the waiting lists are huge. So, you know, if you're talking to somebody who's having serious problems today and you say, well, you can't get in for another 3 to 6 months, well, that's not helpful, is it? So we do have a crisis in mental health service provision in Australia. We also have a crisis in housing. This individual was obviously living rough, so not accessing, I imagine, the services that he required for his mental health condition. Now, I'm not making excuses for what he did, but certainly it's likely that played a part. It won't be all of it, but that's something I do think we need to look at. You know, how closely was he potentially monitored to determine if he was his mental health was going down and therefore he was potentially a risk. I think that is a conversation that needs to be had. We need better service provision, not just to prevent this type of event from happening, but also because people need better service provision generally.
I would love to be putting a comma, not a full stop on that at this point, but I know that you've got to be elsewhere, Xanthi. So thank you so much for stopping by and giving us some of the basics on that. And I'm sure we'll catch up in the following weeks and months as this story, while the trauma of it initially may have been left on the weekend, there'll be a whole lot more to unplay. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much.